Hi, you're about to get smarter in just a few minutes with Curiosity Daily from Discovery. Time flies when you're learning super cool stuff. I'm Nate.
And I'm Callie. If you're dropping in for the first time, welcome to Curiosity, where we aim to blow your mind by helping you to grow your mind. If you're a loyal listener, welcome back.
Today, you'll learn about a compelling study on twins and the nature versus nurture debate, how scientists solved a 60-year-old mystery about bees, and why you shouldn't go last.
Without further ado, let's satisfy some curiosity. Twin brothers Dennis and Douglas were inseparable when they were young, and they were so hard to tell apart that most people could only tell the difference between them because they drove different cars. But something happened when they were in high school that would see their paths sort of diverge. Dennis suffered a traumatic event when he was 13.
But Douglas didn't experience the trauma?
No.
Okay, so this has to be a nature versus nurture story, right? Because if these siblings are genetically the same, then certain differences that come up in their lives could be the result of life events rather than biology or genetics.
That's exactly right. And while Douglas led a stable, family-oriented life, Dennis faced a lot of emotional struggles and turmoil throughout his adulthood. And it's examples like this one that have motivated lots of researchers to conduct studies on twins.
Sure. I mean, it seems like every couple of years, the attitude over nature versus nurture go back and forth. One study shows that our behavior is basically predetermined by our genes. And then another comes along and says it's all about what happens to us that determines our lives.
And that's what makes twins such compelling research subjects. Identical twins are genetically the same, so they give scientists a window into how genes shape our lives. And a new study has taken it a step further and looked into the effects of childhood trauma.
So they wanted to know how childhood trauma affects people later in life, something like that? I'm eager to hear the findings, but it seems pretty obvious on the surface that childhood trauma will probably lead to turmoil later in life.
Sure, but they also wanted to look at it from a slightly different angle. If a pair of people who are genetically identical and who have mostly the exact same upbringing grow up and one of them is diagnosed with anxiety disorder or depression, how much of that diagnosis can be attributed to trauma?
Got it. So if those diagnoses were the result of genetics, at least partly, then you could say that childhood trauma has less of an effect on our well-being later in life.
Well, something like that. So this research team assessed over 25,000 adult twins in Sweden and found that nearly 7,000 of them reported having divergent experiences of childhood trauma. In other words, one of them experienced a trauma and the other did not. Whether these traumas were emotional neglect, hate crimes, sexual abuse, or something else, the findings were pretty remarkable.
If it's anything like the example of Dennis and Douglas you mentioned, I'm sure it wasn't pretty.
The likelihood of psychiatric diagnoses increased by 52% for each additional adverse experience. Even after controlling for genetic and environmental factors, childhood maltreatment was associated with poor adult mental health outcomes.
Honestly, that's not a total surprise.
No, I agree. And while this study might only add to the evidence that environmental factors like trauma have a huge impact on adult mental health, the bigger thing here is the call to action. The researchers say that with all of this evidence, we really need to power up our early intervention and prevention strategies to address the long-term effects of childhood trauma.
Yeah, that's a great point. We know the risks and we know the potential outcomes, and we have the tools to make a difference. We should be doing more.
And if you or someone you know is struggling or in crisis, help is available at the crisis hotline. You can call 988 or text 988.
In 1965, renowned bee biologist Charles Bichoner was exploring the remote Tuamotu archipelago of French Polynesia when he found a bee.
Okay. So, I mean, he's a bee biologist and he found a bee.
Yeah, but this was not just any bee. Not only was it a new species, but being a renowned bee expert, Bichoner also quickly realized that its closest living relative lived in New Zealand. And New Zealand is 3,000 miles away from Tuamotu Archipelago, which is just in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Okay, so how did this little guy get out into the middle of the Pacific Ocean? I mean, bees are great flyers, but they aren't that great.
Now see, that remained a mystery until now. A new research team decided to go back and see if they could get to the bottom of it. So to catch bees, researchers generally look toward the ground where flowering plants bloom and provide bees with their bounty.
Sure, to find the bees, you have to go where they go.
But it turns out that was the problem. A different bee researcher from Australia had observed something interesting in his homeland. Bees buzzing around in the canopies of flowering trees. So on a trip back to the middle of the Pacific, he and his research team put insect nets on poles and reached for the sky.
Wow. Okay, so the original research team was struggling to find bees because they were looking down instead of up?
Yep, pretty much. And swinging those insect nets in the tree canopy produced results almost immediately. They found 8 previously unknown species of Hylaeus bees, the kind that Charles Michener had identified back in 1965. Not only that, they found them all along the island chain stretching between French Polynesia and Australia, including Fiji, which is about halfway between those 2 points.
So these little guys were just island hopping.
Yep. It's possible some of them burrowed into fallen tree limbs that made their way into sea and drifted across to other islands. Some could have also been blown over by storms. There's a few ways they could have skipped across from Australia and New Zealand to the middle of the Pacific.
Right, but the fact is they didn't just magically travel 3,000 miles.
No, they slowly migrated across the waters, and as they went, they evolved. It's a story about the interconnectedness of ecosystems across vast distances. And one of the big takeaways here is that sometimes in order to solve a mystery like this, you have to forget what you think you know and look for clues where you'd least expect them.
You know how parents always tell their kids, don't be a follower? Well, according to a new study, they might actually be onto something there, but not in the way you expect.
Do you mean it's better for people to try to be leaders?
No, see, follow is still the operative word here. People are better off not being followers. And I'll explain. The study wanted to look at the perceptions of people in a sequence, which sounds more complicated than it actually is. The best way to understand what they're talking about is to imagine a reality show with contestants. You, the viewer, are introduced to each new contestant one at a time, which in other words is in a sequence.
Okay, so they wanted to know if the order people are introduced has any impact on how they are perceived.
Exactly.
I'm trying to guess how your place in a sequence would affect how you're perceived. I feel like I'm at a loss. Like, what did they find?
All right, well, let's talk about the studies. So in the first one, they gathered nearly 1,000 participants and basically showed them Facebook profiles one after another and had the participants describe what they saw. They found that when they first started evaluating profiles, they used on average 6.2 positive words. But by the 20th profile, that dropped to an average of 4.7 positive words.
I don't suppose they just saved the worst profiles for the end?
Nope. Each participant was given the profiles in a random order.
Yeah, okay.
Uh-huh. So the second study had around the same number of participants, but this time they each watched a series of character intros from the show The Bachelor.
That's the contestants introduced themselves, right?
Exactly. Participants were shown the exact same character introductions, but in randomized order. And still, the women who were introduced later in the sequence were described more negatively.
Okay, so what's going on here?
The researchers are calling it serial position negativity effect. They think that as we meet people sequentially, we subconsciously focus on distinguishing attributes.
I mean, sure, we try and see how they are different from the people we've already met, right?
Right, but those distinguishing attributes tend to be negatively perceived, leading to a more negative description of folks we meet at the end of the line.
Okay, this feels like it could have a lot of unexpected real-world impacts, doesn't it? Like, what if you're going in for a job interview and you're the 25th person they've seen that day?
It's not great. And in the reverse, people who are in charge of hiring might not be getting the best candidates because they don't realize that this subconscious bias can lead to snap judgments.
Right. Okay, so how do we overcome this bias?
Well, the research team wants to continue the research to better understand the long-term impacts of this phenomenon. But in a world where first impressions matter, it's crucial to remember that our perceptions are not just influenced by what we see or hear, but also by when we see or hear it. Could recognizing and adjusting for this bias make our decisions fairer and our evaluations more accurate? Maybe, but only if we know this bias exists.
Let's recap what we learned today to wrap up.
A study on twins with divergent experiences found that childhood trauma, distinct from genetic and environmental similarities, significantly influences the mental health of adults.
Researchers swinging nets in the treetops of the South Pacific unearthed 8 new species of Hylaeus bees, unraveling the mystery of their vast oceanic journey from New Zealand to remote islands like Fiji.
People evaluated later in sequences, from job interviews to dating, faced a subtle but significant disadvantage, spotlighting how timing can twist our perceptions.
Curiosity Daily is produced by Wheelhouse DNA for Discovery. You can find our show wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd love if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
Our Discovery executive producer is Dominique Vu. Our Wheelhouse DNA executive producer is Cassie Berman. This show is hosted by Callie Gade and Nate Bonham.
Our producer is Kiara Noni, and our associate producer is Kimaya Floyd. Writing is done by Sam Osterhout.
Sound design, audio engineering, and editing by Nick Karasimi.
I'm Nate Bonham.
And I'm Callie Gade. We'll see you next week.